This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, leaders. I'd like to welcome you to the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Really excited about this particular episode. This episode's conversation with the one and only Dr. Darius Daniels. Darius Daniels and I met at a stewardship event that we had here at Ramsey Solutions about a year ago. And I immediately was fascinated by just an inspiring combination of ministry intellect and humility. And I already knew he was an elite communicator. So many of you have heard him speak. He speaks at conferences and seminaries all over the country. And Dr. Darius is the senior pastor of Kingdom Church, which has two locations in New Jersey. And Darius holds a Master's of Divinity degree from Princeton Theological Seminary and a Doctorate of Ministry degree from Fuller Theological Seminary. But not only is he a stud theologian, he's also a killer leader. And I'm excited you get to hear from him. Before we get started with our conversation, I'm excited to invite you to the Stewardship Conference on May 2nd through May 4th, right here in Nashville, Tennessee. I'll be joined by several world-class speakers, including Dave Ramsey, Louis Giglio, Donald Miller, Christy Wright, and many more, plus music from Mac Powell of Third Day and All Sons and Daughters. So it's going to be absolutely phenomenal. If you're a church leader, maybe you're a senior pastor or an executive pastor, small groups pastor, or a stewardship pastor, we'd love to spend 2.5 exciting days investing in you and providing practical insights that you can actually apply in your ministry. Not this conceptual stuff, which is all great too, but really some real practical application kind of stuff for your church. Join me this May at the Stewardship Conference and discover what's possible for your ministry. And maybe it's been a while since you thought about what's possible. It's been more about, I've been there before, where you're thinking about everything that's restricting you, but let's talk about what's possible. I really do believe that creating a culture of stewardship in our churches is the key to people being positioned for ministry. Now, so many folks are not engaging in volunteering and in giving and in outreach just because they can't. And this culture of stewardship that I want to see if I can help develop at your church, it makes all the difference. So here's what you need to do if you want to come. Head over to stewardshipcentral.org. Use the promo code LEADERSPECIAL. No spaces. LEADERSPECIAL. And that's obviously just for the Leadership Momentum Podcast. But you've used the promo code LEADERSPECIAL to get your tickets for only $89. And that obviously that code won't last forever. So grab your tickets now while you're thinking about it, while you're checking the schedule. The regular price right now is $129, and of course it goes up from there, so don't wait. $89 right now. So if you're not sure on what stewardship would mean in your church, that's kind of where you're at. Like, I don't know. We've put together a free PDF that will give you 5 practical lessons on how a stewardship ministry will transform your church. Text the word stewardship to 77948. That's 77948, and we'll send you a link where you can access this free PDF. Again, text the word stewardship to 77948 to get a link for the 5 ways a stewardship ministry will transform your church. Folks, it is a game changer. All right, now you're in the know in regards to the Stewardship Conference, and hey, we're now ready to learn together from Dr. Darius Daniels. Well, Pastor Darius, thank you so much for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast. Great to talk to you.
Chris, I'm super excited to be a part. I've been listening to it, I think, since day one. I'm like an A1 since day one guy. And I think I mentioned it to you just how I just felt like it was an amazing instrument, of, at least for me, of empowerment. And so I'm just really glad to be a part, and I'm glad that you're doing it. And it's helping me and so many other leaders all across this great country.
That's great. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. So tell us a little, you're from Kingdom Church, New Jersey, and it's great to have New Jersey represented on this podcast. Tell us a little bit about the journey. I think 2005 is kind of when you took over, and just walk through the journey for us.
So long story short is we had this amazing launch. It was great. I think we had a little over 1,000 people show up on the first day. And I think the next week I grew it by half of that.
There's a lot of folks that can relate right now. A lot of folks that can relate.
Yeah, we grew down. And what was interesting was, for us at least, that kind of initial boom was encouraging, yet exposing at the same time. We were encouraged by what we saw, what we felt like was a miracle, particularly here in the Northeast. But it exposed very quickly that all of the great concepts and ideas and philosophies that I learned in my time of training did not prepare me for what God had blessed me with.
Yeah.
And so we saw, man, the significance immediately of financial health organizationally and with our parishioners. We saw the need for organizational structures that would support what we were trying to do and the type of leadership base that we can lean on and depend on to manage everything. So I would say, to be frank with you, Chris, the first 5 years or so were just a blur. It was almost like we were just swimming and trying not to drown.
Yeah. So let's just say there's somebody right now who's in their first 5 years and they don't have the advantage of looking back. They're in the middle of the blur right now. What would be some encouragement you have for them?
One is, I've learned that God's grace helps fill the gaps. So there is a gap between, I felt like, my level of responsibility and my competence, at least on a leadership level. Because I went from a college student directly to seminary, a seminarian who was just really learning to balance his checkbook well, to all of a sudden being the leader of this church that everyone was looking to for leadership and assuming that I had more competence than I had because I was gifted in the area of speaking. And so they just assumed that I was competent probably in all areas that were necessary to lead a church well, and I wasn't. But as I learned and I became a ferocious learner, I got mentored by people through books. Bill Hybels, I never met him, but I was mentored through his writings because I got this idea that if I can't sit, even if I got an opportunity to sit with Bill Hybels for 1 hour, he could not tell me in that 1 hour everything that he wrote in four books.
That's a good point. Very good point.
So I just, my encouragement would be, number one, realize that God's grace fills the gaps, and that while you're learning and while you're growing, if you have an appetite to do so, whether it's now, it's so available with podcasts and conferences and YouTube, and a number of these things didn't exist. I feel so old. None of these things didn't exist when I started.
Yes.
But learn as much as you can.
Yeah.
And surround yourself as best you can with the people that God sends into your life to help you. Because, you know, when you're starting off, you're going to look at someone who you really feel like is going to be able to speak into your life in a way to help you, and you may not have access to them. And you can have a pity party about that, or you can take advantage of the people that God has placed in your life and just trust God's grace to fill the gaps.
Yeah. So you felt promoted quickly, maybe too quickly, because you were such a great communicator. And so you felt like your confidence was behind. Let's say that someone else out there right now listening is in the same boat. They feel like maybe it's their presence, maybe it's their demeanor, maybe it's their looks, but somehow they got promoted past their competence, or maybe like three or four people around them all quit, or they just got promoted fast for some reason. What are some things that maybe you did well? that you, you know, walked into that well, and maybe some things that maybe were a problem when you got promoted.
One thing that I would say is, in terms of what I felt like I managed well, was I was very assertive to get my hands around and my head in all the material that I could from people who were further down the road than I was, because I didn't want to learn every lesson experientially.
Yes, amen.
Because it cost me so much.
Yeah.
Sometimes it cost me members. Sometimes it cost us finances. And this, for us, was probably more debilitating than anything else. It cost us morale. Yeah. Like, if I made a leadership blunder, the organizational morale would take a hit. And that just kind of impacted everything a lot of times, growth and resources and people's commitment level. But I wanted to get insight from people who were down the road and not just people who were in the same space and season in their life and leadership that I was. So that's one thing I felt like I did well. One thing I didn't do well was I didn't give myself the type of grace I readily extended to others.
Wow. Yeah, hit on that for a second.
So I lived with, for a very long time, and I think to some degree still wrestle with a bit today, regret about areas of incompetence that I had that contributed to, I feel like, our church and our organization not developing as smoothly as it could have or as swiftly as I would have liked to see it develop. Yet, when it came to me coaching other leaders, when it came to me shepherding other people's life, I was constantly communicating it to them, the reality of God's grace, that it is sufficient, that if regret, after you've learned the lesson from the mistake, then regret really has no other purpose than to imprison you. Like, your mistakes can be a school or a prison. You choose. And for me, I felt like I was imprisoned by them. And I had to learn, and am learning over time, that God's grace doesn't just cover our mistakes. It also impacts our mishaps. It's not just about grace, isn't just necessary for life. It's also necessary for leadership.
That's so true. I mean, we've all made mistakes in leadership, and oftentimes we teach on grace and we apply grace to others, but we definitely don't apply it to ourselves. It's very good. So throughout the years you've been leading there, and you've had times where you've needed to apply grace to yourself and to apply grace to others. And you've had this time to develop your philosophies when it comes to ministry. Of course, your higher education has done that as well. One of your strong desires is to have a church that is open to the community for all socioeconomic backgrounds,
yeah,
all ethnic backgrounds, all age backgrounds. And that's been something that's developed over time, or is that something that was just birthed in you at a really early age? And as you've kind of led out with that at your church, what have been some of the keys to success, and what have been some of the obstacles?
That was the desire for that type of community with us, that type of Christian community. So as long as I can remember, I've had very diverse relationships, whether it was ethnically or socioeconomically. And I've had diverse relationships, even though I've never really been in diverse contexts. None of my schools were necessarily diverse. My community was definitely, that I grew up in, was not diverse. And even when I went on to education after high school, those, you know, it wasn't necessarily diverse, but that was just kind of my life.
Yeah.
And I feel like my life on a personal level was so greatly enriched by the connections that I had from people who didn't see life the way that I did. And that personal experience, for me, I think, is what made me more open to seeing certain things in scripture that cause it to kind of become a conviction. But it wouldn't be honest for me to say it started off as a biblical conviction. It was just my life's narrative, and I think God was involved in that. Mm-hmm. And as I begin to see in scripture that really, you know, God's church is not this or that, it's this and that. I felt like I wanted our church to be a community that was reflective of that. And we have tried to the best of our ability to be a community that is not this or that, but this and that.
Yes.
And it has come with its own set of challenges. What we have found is the class barrier and the educational barrier are huge areas of tension when it comes to actually creating that kind of diverse community. It's, race has its own set of complications, but in our experience, what we have seen is that class can cause division among people of the same race. So, like, literally at Kingdom Church, we have like, literally, you could have someone who commutes to New York and works on Wall Street. And literally, they can be in the same service with someone who used to live on the street. Mm. Like, literally.
Yeah.
And what becomes, think about this practically, what happens when both of their children are in children's ministry together?
Yeah, totally different behaviors.
Totally different behaviors, totally different worlds. One may come up in a family, in a system that has support, mother and father. The other may come up in a family context where it's just the mother. They don't have male support in the home. One may come from a grade school system. The other may not come from a grade school system. Think about the tensions that even creates with the people who serve in children's ministry and having to communicate to people who are dealing with, who have such great disparities. So I feel like that's kind of been, at least in our context, our greatest challenge. And what we've been attempting to do is to really create a context where wherever you are is where you are, mm-hmm. and you shouldn't be vilified for being where you are. Like, sometimes I think in our culture there can be this hostility toward people who have, for whatever reason, by God's grace, done well for themselves financially. We don't want that culture in our church because we feel like that person is valued and matters as much to God as the person whose life kind of took them down a different path.
Yeah, there's clearly some major obstacles when it comes to that and some tensions. That you just highlighted the children's ministry as an example. From a leadership standpoint, have you seen more results and some positive trends in this area by being a reactive leader or proactively leading on this subject?
It's a bit of both. Mm-hmm. Because this is kind of a personal and then evolved into a spiritual conviction of mine that we were a bit proactive about trying to create this kind of culture. Yet at the same time, we've had to be reactive to some of the realities that try and merge these two worlds. We've really been slapped in the face with some realities that we have had to reapproach. So, for example, one of the things that we begin to see, it's so amazing that when the haves and the have-nots are actually together and the haves have access to the life and the narrative of some of the have-nots, that the haves and the have-nots being in the same place, it becomes mutually beneficial because what we've learned is everybody's rich and poor in some area.
Yeah, that's very, very good. So from a stage communication standpoint, not just as a lead pastor, but everyone listening in who communicates either from the stage or maybe it's mass communication like an email or something, knowing this is out there, you've got the haves and the have-nots. How is this? What are some little small tweaks that you've had to do in your communication to make sure that you kind of go out there and you grab the hearts of both the haves and the have-nots?
What has served me well is really being intentional about cultivating, first of all, relationships with people in both categories, because that gives me a degree of insight into their life that I wouldn't necessarily have because I hadn't gone everybody's path. So I don't know what it's like to be on the street. I don't know what it's like to have made a mistake and have a criminal record and not be able to get employed. I don't know what any of that feels like. However, having relationships with people who do and hearing some of their stories gives me insight into their world to a degree that it kind of helps me at least speak to it, even if I can't directly relate to it. And so what I attempt to do is when I speak, I attempt to really speak to three chairs on every level. If I'm making a point, I'm saying, how can I unpack this point that speaks to three chairs? By that, I mean, there may be a mature Christian, a growing Christian, and a non-Christian in our room. How do I make a point? How do I expound on a point that speaks to all of them? Educationally, there may be someone who's highly educated, moderately educated, not educated at all. Someone who's incredibly wealthy, someone who's middle class, somebody who's incredibly poor. And as I craft messages, I think through three chairs in all of those specific areas, and I just try to do my best, not sure how good I am at it, but try to do my best to speak into those realities.
That is so good. So good. So when you're crafting the message, is there like some kind of trick you've got like in the corner of your page, you've got like three chairs written out, or like, is it just something you've done for years and it's in your brain?
It's in my brain.
Okay. Well, folks, if you're listening and you're just starting off on mass communication, and might be just a good practice to have something on maybe right there on your desk, just to remind you that where are people at? Everyone's not, a lot of times I'll catch myself and I'll be communicating about to parents as if they all have parents that are the same age as my kids. And it's like some have got that are already gone. Some don't have kids. Some have teenagers. And I'll find myself assuming that everyone's got elementary age children. So that's really, really good. So you're super educated. You got a master's degree in divinity. You got a doctorate degree in ministry. How have you channeled all that higher education to help your ministry and not kind of get in the way of connecting with people in the seats? So like even right now on the podcast, you could literally blow our minds intellectually, but you're choosing to just kind of find that middle ground where you can connect with people. How's that? I'm sure there's some kind of wrestle inside of you because you talk to seminaries, you talk to universities, and then you talk to your church, and then you talk at conferences. How do you manage that, not being too puffed up with your higher education, but sucking the nutrients out of it?
For me, in terms of the puffed up aspect, I hope, God knows, I hope I'm not. I think for me, one of the ways that God has used ministry to help me keep education in perspective is that ministry teaches you sometimes how impotent education is when it comes to practically dealing with people's lives.
That's good for a lot of folks to hear.
Can I tell you this? I just want to tell you this one thing. I'll never forget this. My very first counselor session, I'm in my early 20s, and at this particular point, I think I was interning, and so I was at Princeton Seminary. I'm learning all these great concepts and ideas, and this lady at the church I was interning at wanted to have a session. So we sat down, and she walks in, and she says, I've been married twice. My first husband died in my home. My second husband was a drug addict, committed suicide. I was single and didn't date anyone for 10 years. The next person that I dated ended up being a swindler, took me for everything that I had. I've attempted on two different occasions to take my own life. I'm considering taking it again, but I decided to sit down with someone from the church to see if there was anything that could be done to help me. I'm in my early 20s, and I'm thinking, okay, they taught us about the hypostatic union and word-flesh Christology, but I saw immediately, and I think that was the benefit, by God's grace, the benefit of actually marrying the practical with the philosophical. It helps put everything in perspective. So that experience, hopefully I'll never forget it, really taught me how you have to take and look at whatever learning or education you've received and submit that to God's mission.
Yeah, that's so,
so you don't serve the degrees serve the mission. And so whatever brain power, intellectual acumen that anyone may have, you have to look at, what is God giving me stewardship over? Who is God giving me stewardship over? And how do I take the gifts, the talents, the exposure, the education that he's given me and use it to be a faithful steward of that assignment, as opposed to using it in a way that fulfills my own sense of need to prove to people how whatever I am.
I love it. I love you using the word stewardship too in a non-money context. Thank you so much for doing that. It's more than just money, people. So yes, you're pretty young. How old are you?
I'm 37.
37 years old. Now,
yeah, I don't feel young
so
anymore.
11, 12 years ago, I mean, you were young.
I was young.
So how have you navigated leading others who are older than you during the last 11, 12 years? I mean, you've had to. I mean, there's probably been some... There's people listening in right now that have to lead people who are older than them. Some of them are like 5 years experience, and they're leading people with 20 years experience.
Yeah.
How did you navigate all that?
Well, listen, there have been times, frankly, when I look back in retrospect, and I've asked myself, why did they follow me? I'm not sure, but I cannot remember the scripture off the top of my head. My grandmother, before she passed away, I was very young in ministry, in the initial phases of preparing myself to ministry before I went to seminary. And she showed me the scripture in the Bible where Paul told Timothy, let no man despise your youth, but be an example to the believers. And that was prior to me having any ministry responsibility. That scripture stuck with me in a way. And so what I've attempted to do in leading those that are older, some more experienced and more accomplished in almost every area of life than me, is not to be an expert, but to be an example.
So good.
Because when it comes to some areas of leadership, I was not and am not an expert, but one thing I could be is an example. And what I've discovered is, one, in my own life, in terms of people that I look to for leadership, and two, experientially, in my experience of leadership in our organization, what I have learned is the type of person you become motivates people in a way that expertise does not. That who you actually are positions you to be the type of leader that doesn't have to make people follow. You make people want to follow.
So, so good.
And so I think that just kind of served me well. I've tried to be as sincere as I possibly could. I've tried to be as faithful as I possibly could in the roles and responsibilities that I've had, because who you are inspires people in a way that's different than what you know.
Yeah, and that sincere element, people can sniff that out fast if you're not.
Mm-hmm.
They really can. And just being in a skeptic world, and man, they know the real deal when they see the real deal, and they know when they don't have the real deal.
And Chris, I think you may be able to test this. Certain people have accomplished so much in their life that no matter what they are exposed to in terms of areas of competence and expertise, it's not going to knock them off their feet. You know, like there's some communicators out there who they communicate so well, they've seen so much, it's probably nothing somebody could ever do with a microphone to impress them. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to who you are, that strikes a chord in them, and I think awakens an appetite in them to want to follow you, not just because of what you do and what you can teach them, but makes them want to follow you because of who you are and who they now are inspired to become because of what they've seen in you.
I could not agree more that in today's day, you can turn on great preaching and great leadership coaching all over the place in the click of a button. But and some of those folks who do that, yourself included, that I can go on Instagram and see some just absolute, just peeling the paint off the walls preaching. You've got the heart and the sincerity and who you are also, But that's just good hope for all of us who are maybe can't are not in the top 1% of communication. That it's really who you are, and over time, and that sincerity, and living out your values. It's very inspiring for people.
Yes, sir, without a doubt.
So let's do a little bit of a shift. That's people who are older than you. How about those who are younger? And here's where I'm going with this. Recently, there was a YouTube released. Actually, it was last October. But just recently, the church community started sending it back and forth via Instagram, and I saw it. And it's Simon Sinek talking about millennials in the workplace. So let's talk about how have you had to navigate leading millennials? He said in the YouTube, just to kind of bring everyone back up to speed if you have not seen it. And if you haven't seen it, I will include a link for this particular YouTube video right below this episode on iTunes. But just to give us kind of a brief overview, he said that this millennial generation, they get blamed for the sense of entitlement. And he said it stems from really four things: failed parenting strategies, technology, impatience, and the environments that are created by corporate America. And he's talking about the workplace. I want to bring that into church world specifically. How has this manifested at Kingdom Church? And what advice do you have for us as we lead this generation who probably is listening as well right now? This is asked out of love, not out of spite. Mm-hmm. This is so that we can bridge this gap between generations. And this is folks who are born, according to Simon Sinek, after 1984. Mm-hmm. How have you navigated this?
Well, we've had to deal with it probably most intimately among our team, among our staff. Okay. Like I said in the early part of the podcast, we grew rapidly. We had a great launch, and things kind of mellowed out, I think, really the next week. And then they took back off like a skyrocket in terms of growth. Mm-hmm. And so we had to...
And Dr. Darius, let me just cut in real quick. Where are you guys at now to give everyone some context? Where are you guys at attendance-wise right now?
Yeah, so we will see anywhere from 22 to 2,500 adults on a weekend. Gotcha. I'm not sure.
Overall, you're probably around 38 or 4. I know you're not, you know, looking at that every single second, mm-hmm. but I just wanted to give everyone context to the lens that you're looking through.
Right. So, which is not gigantic, but here in New Jersey, it is in people's minds. It is just like, it's huge to them. That's something else. That's a leadership dynamic, right? On how the way you see your organization and the way others see it can be completely different.
Yes.
I think for so long, I led from how I saw it and not how people in my context saw it. And I think that caused us to have some challenges anyway also. But my point being is that we had to hire quickly. And because I was young, and because I am young even now, most of the people who wanted to work for us or who were willing to were young, you know, which probably makes sense. I think people who are older have more sense.
it's funny I'm asking you this question. You're only like 4 years out of that generation.
Yeah, so I can say our challenge, you know, as it relates to like issues, let's say like entitlement or impatience, I'm not able to speak to that as much because I felt like I wrestled with that, and mm-hmm. many of my peers have communicated to me that they did also. So I'm not going to say that is generationally specific to millennials, but yeah. There are two things that I felt like we wrestled with, and each generation has its own set of challenges. Like you said, this is in love, but there were two. One was an overestimation of their own ability.
Wow.
And two was this inability, not with all, but with some, this inability to really be attentive because of this digital invasion with technology.
Yeah, speak to that for a minute.
Yeah, so on the overestimation of ability, it was almost as if we wrestled with this assumption that because a team member had great ideas and, let's say, a great educational background, even if they were inexperienced in an area, they would want to immediately come and assume a position of expertise and have a degree of influence that is only gained through fruitfulness.
Yes.
In your lane. And so that's what I mean by that. As it relates to the digital invasion, we would be in meetings, and it's like, I have like a no phone zone now in meetings, because we would be in meetings and we would see people on devices, and we would assume that they were taking notes and things of that nature.
Nope.
And let's say we had an event, and then all of a sudden people are not carrying out assigned areas of responsibility. People are clueless as to something that we discussed in the meeting. And what we began to discover was people were not as attentive in the meetings. Now, we've read Death by Meeting and How to Run a Successful Meeting and all of that. So we've taken ownership and said, hey, let's do what we can as an organization to make sure our meetings are productive and engaging. Yet at the same time, as an adult, we're in a meeting. It's going to be hard for you to get the information that you need to get if you're on Twitter, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram. And we saw really a social conditioning that use technology almost as escapism out of anything that felt like boredom.
Mm-hmm.
So we have really talked a little bit about that. We want to be good stewards of it. We read this amazing book called The Digital Invasion. And I think it's really helped us kind of put our team on the right path in terms of responsible use and responsible management of it.
Yeah, well, that's great. Simon Sinek had talked a little bit more about the failed parenting strategies, and just everyone got a trophy growing up in this age group. And so there's this, I guess, entitlement that, okay, so I showed up to work for 2 or 3 weeks. What's my next promotion? And I know that's kind of exaggerated, but sometimes it's subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, man, I've been killing it. Like I've been doing great for 4 months. And you're like, you just don't know what you don't know, that a lot of the folks in the older generation have had to work 3, 4, 5, 10 years before a promotion. And so it's just that microwave versus crockpot culture. So that's where the impatience kind of settles in. And of course, technology doesn't help with that, where you can order anything you want, Amazon, and it's there in 2 days, that kind of thing. So that's kind of some of the things that, folks, it might be a great thing if you just put the phones away, take notes on something else. Maybe it's on your computer, and then shut down all the apps where you can be on social media on your computer. Whatever, just engage in the process. Because what happens, you might get your two takeaways. Yes, okay, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, but you forgot the why behind everything that we were about to do.
Mm.
If you don't know the why behind the initiative, you can't lead it.
Yeah.
You can't vision cast for it. So that's good. So technology, that's kind of where we'll wrap up our conversation today. It is a real part of life, obviously. There's a lot of pros, especially when it comes to promo and reaching the community with the message. What are some of the shifts over the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 years, just to stay up with the times? What are some things you've had to do?
Yeah, that's great. One, when it comes to, and I'll use this word, some people in our context find it, you know, church context may find it sacrilegious, but I'll just use it for the purpose of this conversation. One is the way you market or reach people.
Let me just throw in there, if you're going to market anything, Jesus should be marketed.
Yeah, I like that. That was taken. I'm telling you right now.
If we're going to market Coca-Cola, let's market Jesus. I'm just saying.
Again. Yes.
He doesn't need us to. He doesn't need us to, but he also gives us the tools. Okay, I'm going to stop preaching.
Right. I love that. Yes. I got that one now. Thank you. I appreciate it. Using that.
I got strong thoughts, apparently.
Yes, sir. So we had to adjust there quickly, radically. I mean, you know, when I started, even up to maybe five, six years ago, we were using mailers and flyers and commercials and you name it. And culture shifted and changed so quickly that I began to notice something. And this is how I got the epiphany. It wasn't research. It wasn't data that initially awakened me to this reality. What I began to see was that when I was getting mailers and things like that in the mail, I wasn't looking at them.
That's right.
But when something came up in my feed, I would pay attention to it.
Yep.
And so that's when I kind of went back to our team and I said, hey, I've noticed something. I want us to look into this. And we begin to see how even without intentionality on our part, when it came to people finding out about our church, it went from mailers, television commercials, billboards. We did all of that. To I Googled churches in New Jersey. I heard this probably the first time, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. A couple said to me one time, they said, we were new to the area. We Googled churches in Ewing, New Jersey, and we used the websites to determine which one we would visit first. We visited here. We never visited anywhere else. Mm. So it went from that, and it kind of progressed to social media. So we have had to... it has impacted the way we even approach, you know, some people on our team. And so we've went from heavy marketing consulting firms who utilize methods that we talked about that I just mentioned earlier to leaning more heavy toward how do we take advantage of the digital mission field and how do we market / reach people through those avenues. It's affected the way that we've staffed. And so a communications director for us now has to be a bit different than a communications director 5 years ago, because mm-hmm. you have to do more than send out press releases and have great relationships with newspapers. You've got to manage the digital space.
So true. Well, folks, if you're listening in, you're kind of feel like you're a little behind on this technology thing. I really strongly recommend, Dr. Darius and I both strongly recommend, just have a brainstorming session with your team and maybe a couple outside voices, third-party perspective to really look at your technology. How much is geared towards desktop versus mobile? Are your HD screens, are they comparable to what people are experiencing at home? Are you maybe have a campus that's on a one-week delay? I hope not still. People are not used to delay. They've probably already listened to it online. Is there convenient options for giving and engaging and volunteering? You got to make sure it's convenient. Communication, you know, is that your emails seem up to date? Is it too much text or is it more image based? You got to think about these things. So make sure you guys have a brainstorm session and think about how technology has affected the church today. Dr. Darius, we thank you for your time. And how can people further connect with you?
On social media.
There you go. What a great.
I want it. Everything is Darius Daniels.
Darius Daniels. You get your name that with no like underscore, no nothing,
that's
huh?
It. You know, my name, Darius, is spelled unique. It's spelled with an H. So it's Dharius. And it's such a weird spelling. Some years ago, I started to change it, and my wife talked me out of it. She said, hey, that's what your mother name is. That's your name. And so I'm sticking with it. With Dharius Daniels, and that's everything.
Friend, I really appreciate your time, and you've invested a lot into the church community, and we are cheering on Kingdom Church, and so excited about the impact that you have on the church world. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chris. It's been a blast.
Well, you can see why I was so intrigued by Dr. Darius Daniels when I met him. To be so wise and accomplished and to be so young. You know, he's got wisdom when it comes to navigating through diversity in his church. Wisdom when it comes to making sure his education is an asset instead of a liability. Wisdom when it comes to leading those who are older than him and those who are younger than him. And of course, he's got an elite self-awareness and humility. Obviously, I'm a big fan. Actually, I told you earlier, I met Darius at a stewardship event right here in Nashville. You see, this is the example of the high-quality friends that you can run into at the upcoming stewardship conference. And just a reminder for all of us, if you want to engage in the stewardship conference, head over to stewardshipcentral.org, use the promo code LEADERSPECIAL, get your tickets for only $89. Again, that code won't last forever. Grab your tickets now while you're thinking about it. The regular price right now is $129, and it only goes up from there. And again, if you're not sure what this whole stewardship thing means and what it means in your church, we have put together that free PDF. It'll give you those 5 practical lessons on how a stewardship ministry will transform your church. All you got to do is text the word stewardship to 77948, and we'll send you a link where you can access the free PDF. Again, text the word stewardship to 77948. Hey, before you go, if you appreciated Dr. Darius's insight today, hey, please let him know. Reach out to him on Twitter or Instagram. Let him know that we, as a Leadership Momentum community, we appreciate him and his wisdom and his experience. So make sure you reach out to him on social media. Email, reach out to him, however you need to do it, but thank him for his time. Well, that's it. That's all for this episode of the Leadership Momentum Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. And please know I am cheering you on from Nashville, Tennessee. God bless.
Thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown, brought to you by Ramsey Solutions. If you're looking for more details on the Stewardship Conference in May, or would like to learn how other leaders are reclaiming biblical stewardship, head over to stewardshipcentral.org. Loved what you heard today and didn't want to miss another episode? Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. While you're there, share your feedback by leaving a review. Finally, stay up to date with Chris Brown, including his daily radio show and podcast, Chris Brown's True Stewardship, on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by following at Chris Brown on air. On behalf of your host, Chris Brown, and the team at Ramsey Solutions, thanks for joining us for the Leadership Momentum Podcast.